Why do I conduct my show on this manner? Mondo!
Sweet mother of God, what is the holdup?
Eleanor!
Once again, something wonderful in my life has been turned into a giant crap fest.
Mondo!
Got a little bit more cock for you here.
Eleanor!
Bowtie boy got the big snaggeroonie.
Mondo!
Oh, six of my nipples are tingling.
Eleanor!
See why America loves him so much?
Mondo!
I'd like to smash you in the face with my shillelagh.
Eleanor!
I have no idea what's going on.
Mondo!
He was lying.
He said he never tells a lie.
He was lying when he said that.
Eleanor!
I want a cup.
Well, could you spell that?
C-U-P. I want to see you. Oh, my God.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Stomach batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
For God's sake, strap yourself down.
That's right. It's the show your bosses don't want you to listen to. The show that's going to tell you the truth about what's going on in the workplace. So wake the hell up. It's the Cup of Joe radio show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man, the voice of the radical middle, and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Our engineer, Sock Puppet Sam, is here!
Hey, Joe, how are you?
And we've got a lot of stuff to talk about, but first, Sam, give us the URL for the site.
That's cupojoe.blogspot.com.
And the email address.
joevec@bellsouth.net.
All right, I want to welcome all of my fans listening in at the White Rose Society. That's whiterosesociety.org. My good friend Ben Birch hosting my archives there. And, of course, all my fans at rantsradio.com listening in on Thursdays and Sundays.
Okay, where were we? Here we are. What's going on? Oh, here we are. There we go. It's running. It is 3:40 p.m. on Sunday. What the hell day is it? It is March 20th.
Palm Sunday.
It's Palm Sunday. I didn't realize that. It's Palm Sunday.
Palm Sunday?
It's a Christian thing. Yeah. It's a Catholic thing, I should
say. So next week is Easter.
Yeah. Next week is Easter. And there's the beef. We're cooking dinner as we speak here, ladies and gentlemen. Professional radio. Lunch. Late lunch. And my wife's got a TV dinner, and I've got one that's going to be ready a little later on. How you doing, Rick? Ravishing Rick is here with me. How you doing?
I'm doing well, Joe. And you?
Pretty good. Pretty good. You turned your cell phone off.
I did. There's too much feedback or something. We always get that.
It's very, some very strange noise we got.
I think it's got a heavy-duty magnet in there, because if I put it around any speakers, it just makes some buzzing noises, like, you know, like a Geiger counter.
Well, you know, when I was in the Air Force, I was in the Army first, but when I was in the Air Force and I dealt with electronics, we had a term for it. It's called FM, friggin' magic. You have no idea how half of this shit works. It just works. You know? I'm like that with computers. I have no idea how it works. I just know this is the program. I know how to use it. You know, I'm not a programmer, and I don't understand. I mean, I understand binary and, you know, in general, you know, how things work and maneuver, but I don't know how the hell it works. I just know point and click, point and click. And most people are like that. And when we lose that ability to design computers, as America already has, I think, to a certain extent, then that's gonna really endanger us, because I think we're being endangered because we're falling behind technologically, especially to the Asian countries.
Well, it's more like they're catching up.
Well,
so the question is whether they are, in fact, going to surpass us or not. They certainly are at the leading edge of manufacturing.
Yeah, but the Japanese have always been like one step ahead of us as far as, you know, at least in the last, you know, 30 years or so. They've always been the ones who produced things first. I mean, you know, when you're talking about VCRs, which they had in Japan before we had here, DVD players they had there before we had here, laser discs. All that stuff they had there first. It's almost like that's where the beta market is.
It's a curious market, because they really embrace technology.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing is that you get a Sony, or you get a Toshiba, you get a Matsushita, which is NEC, Panasonic. All those companies are hugely competitive.
Mm-hmm.
And so if one comes out with something, the next one's got to do something better.
Right.
And the next one's got to do something better.
Well, that's good.
And that's... that's what I suppose capitalism is all about.
That is what capitalism is all about.
But you don't find that here.
Well, that's because now we have, with the corporate culture we have here in this country, it is not about competition. It's about monopolizing the industry. And whenever you have a monopolization of the industry, you're going to have that kind of sluggish production because they don't want innovation. They want to be able to keep doing the same thing because, you know, what was it that was said about U.S. Steel once? U.S. Steel isn't in the business of making steel. It's in the business of making money. And that's what American business is. I mean, yes, the Japanese people want to make money too, but they're interested in the product that they make, and they revel in that, and they have a great desire to improve on what they've been doing. But here in this country, the business aspect has always been, you know, just make money. If you can make money making a sucky product, that's all well and good.
Well, you see in Japan, the interesting thing is that it's big corporations who have, five corporations own the electronic market in Japan,
mm-hmm.
But it's a different attitude towards what they do.
Well, part of it is because of the type of the society they have. I mean, they have a homogenous culture. Basically, they're all Japanese, but there's a few Koreans and a few others in there somewhere, but it's all Japanese. We have this huge melting pot for all these people with different attitudes, and that makes it a little bit more difficult for us to agree on anything. And especially when you're talking about progressives, because the progressives are the ones that are least organized politically and economically and stuff like that, because, you know, we don't think that way. It's like herding cats, like we keep talking. And, you know, it's harder for us because we have to we don't have this nice, well-built machine that the right wing has in order to get things done. But we have the numbers. I mean, more people are really liberals, whether they know it or not, because they do want the things that liberals have made possible. Most people do want Social Security. You know, they've had polls like that about, you know, the president losing popularity over Social Security. But my point is, if the elections are rigged, what difference does the poll make? Do the polls make? 80% don't want Social Security, but 51% is going to vote George Bush in, or whoever the next Republican is going to be anyway, whether the machines are going to do it, whether they're going to commit fraud or not. I mean, that's what's happened with this. Most people in the country really do not want the policies of the Bush administration. But because of voter fraud and because of media manipulation, we're winding up with really a minority of maybe 10 or 20% of the people determining the course of the country.
Well, you also have a very stubborn administration, so that administration won't admit it's wrong about anything.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, it's very stubbornly pursuing policies that it wants to pursue, not really as a representative policy of what Americans want.
Right.
So even if it was on the conservative side of the middle, that would be acceptable to many Americans.
Sure.
But as it stands right now, it's on the far right conservative side of the far right, and so that's the scary part.
Well,
and they're just going to push it through.
And it's just such tremendous hypocrisy. I mean, we talked about the Schiavo case, which is, you know, still ramping up in court, and it's this woman with a feeding tube, and now the Congress is stepping
Shively.
In.
Isn't it Shively?
Schiavo? No, Schiavo. S-C-H-I-A-V-O.
I believe it's Shively, but
whatever her damn name is. The point is, here they are fighting like crazy for this woman to stay alive, right? But in the meantime, their policies are causing literally the deaths of, you know, how many people because of poverty? I mean, how many children have died because of poverty? And they just came out on some of the blogs that George Bush signed the bill in, I think, 2001, 2002, that basically said that hospitals have the right, over the objections of the family, to pull the plug on someone if they can't afford to continue keeping them alive.
If they can't afford to, being the operative words.
Right. So, you know, it's wrong for the husband who, and keep in mind that this woman, it wasn't like the second she went into a coma that the husband was trying to get her killed. She had been in a coma for 8 years before her husband finally said, this is enough. She never wanted this, even though she never had anything written down. And by the way, have a living will, and I should get that taken care of too, just in case something like this happens so people know what your desires are. I, for one, do not want to be kept alive in a vegetative state like that. I don't care if there's a possibility that 200 years down the line they might be able to revive me. You know, I don't want that. And if anybody listening, this is be evidence for the future.
I don't mind cryogenics as long as they put me next to Ted Williams.
But there's a but we'll all wind up as disembodied heads like in Futurama, right? This woman didn't have any kind of written down will, and it's just basically the word of the husband that she didn't want to remain this way. And it's a fight between the husband and the woman's parents. Now, Are the woman's parents? I really don't have all the details on it. Are they willing to accept all of the expenses of keeping this woman alive? That's what I want to know.
Apparently, yes.
And apparently, so. And I don't understand if the parents want to do it, the husband just say, I wash my hands of it, let the parents deal with it if they want to deal with it. As far as I'm concerned, she's dead. He's already remarried. This woman has been in a coma for like 15 years.
Well, apparently she was in an accident of some kind.
But she had a stroke.
Something happened
due to potassium deficiency. She had a heart attack or stroke and it caused brain damage.
But he was awarded $1 million. Or something.
I have no idea about that.
And maybe his money ran out. His money ran out.
I don't know. I really don't know. I know.
The current thing that's happening, Joe, is they've got a bill before Congress happening right now, and the Republicans have been trying to push it through the House and the Senate to do basically a stay of execution,
right?
And put the feeding tube back in. Even though the judge down in Florida has ordered it removed,
right?
So here they are, the people who believe in states' rights,
blatantly
interfering once again in states' rights.
And like I said, the hypocrisy of it is that these are the same people who are gung ho to go to war with Iraq based on lies. And you know, most of the Republican leadership, I'm sure, knew that they were getting told bullshit by the Bush administration. They just didn't care. So it's perfectly all right for us to drop a bomb and kill, you know, hundreds, thousands of innocent Iraqi women and children. But the life of this one woman, because it's a political grandstand for them, they got to make a big play about.
I like that word, political grandstand, because when you talk about the political grandstanding, what I see it is a smoke cloud. You have them in front of Congress, all these important issues out there,
yeah.
and they're making this is the one that they're using to make the news. They're using the baseball players and the steroids
to make the news.
See,
they have to. This is just a thing because they've tied themselves with the religious right. You have to understand that the current Republican Party is a merging of the religious political right and corporatists who don't necessarily care much about the religious people. They're just using them, basically. This is the bulk of their support. And this is the price that the corporatists have to pay for their support, that they have to do these ridiculous, outrageous things, because these people look at the sanctity of life and, you know, they're totally against abortion. And you can make an argument in one case or another. I don't want to get into that. But they're making this, you know, statement of life. But on the other hand, the corporatists are the ones who were going out and, you know, basically killing Iraqis so they can steal their oil. And, of course, there was a news thing about that. It shows that, you know, the Bush administration, we had evidence that the Bush administration was planning on going to war with Iraq long before 9/11. In fact, almost the minute they got into office. So, you know, so much for the sanctity of life. That's bullshit to these people. It means nothing.
But you see, what I mean about the smokescreen there, Joe, is the idea that what's going to happen is all this stuff gets on people's minds. So it's whether you're talking about Michael Jackson and his kangaroo court, or whether you're talking about Janet Jackson's nipple, or whatever you're talking about, Martha Stewart, or the Schiavo case, or whoever you're talking about, all this makes front page news. That's what people know about. They can tell you anything about the Oscars and that sort of thing, but they can't tell you what's happening to our country. How many people out there know that the Arctic National Wildlife thing has gone through as a little amendment to a budget bill?
Yep. And the thing about it is, they don't really need to do this. I mean, there's not enough oil up there. There's never been any evidence that there's enough oil in there that's going to last us more than a couple of months. It's going to take a huge amount of work just to get that little bit out there. We could save a lot more oil by just demanding better standards from the cars, that, you know, better gas mileage standards. But they want to do it just to prove they can do it. You know, this is we're in control. We can do whatever the hell we want, and doesn't matter what anybody else thinks. This is why they're pushing for
that. Well, you go back to that smokescreen thing.
Yeah.
It's because, you know, it's like as long as what they are good at is controlling the conversation.
Right.
So they steer the conversation in one way while they do everything else behind your back. And by the time they've done it, it's too late.
That's right. And while you're talking about that, I want to bring this up because, no, that's not the program I want. Get out of there. Because Digby at digsbysblog.com, hullabaloo. Go on the website. You'll see it. Cup of Joe at blogspot.com. He's got a thing about that, and as soon as I can get it loaded up here, and he's talking about how the press handles it, is basically what he's talking about. Let's see. I can't speak for every. This is what Digby said. He said, I can't speak for everyone on the left, but this is why I cannot trust the mainstream media. It's not because they're biased. I don't know what the individual reporters' politics are, and I don't care. I mistrust the media because they get played over and over again by the right wing and keep coming back for more. I don't know if they're stupid or weak, but it's clear to me that they're addicted to spoon-fed, puerile, right-wing generated gossip and completely unwilling to pursue serious Republican scandals beyond a perfunctory story or two before they move on to the next atrocity. And I mean right-wing generated gossip, because it's clear that they will not breathlessly pursue a Republican sex scandal with equal fervor, even when it features a gay prostitute in the conservative White House press room who planted pictures of his erection all over the internet. And this is what Digby had to say, and that's exactly right. This is the problem. This is the problem that we're having. There's no balance. The press isn't reporting this stuff. Bush and his people have done stuff that are miles beyond anything Nixon did. Miles beyond anything Clinton did. And Clinton didn't really do anything. You know, nothing that Clinton did had to do with his acts in office. It was all, you know, he lied about a blowjob. Well, they put him on trial and they forced him into a situation where they could take anything he say and turn it into perjury. Honey, just put it somewhere. I'll get to it later. My wife was trying to bring me lunch, and it's like, I'm in the middle of talking here. Professional radio, ladies and gentlemen. But you're right. It's a smokescreen. It's weapons of mass distraction. That's exactly what it is. It's weapons of mass distraction. And I don't blame the Republicans for doing it, because that's what they do. But I blame the media for falling for it and allowing it to perpetuate itself.
Well, you know, during the 2000 election, they were convinced about there was a certain all that fraud going on. So a British, an American who was based in Britain, did a...
Greg Palast.
He did a study on the whole thing. And he talked to NBC News about it and that sort of thing, and told them what he knew, and NBC went into so-called investigate, and Greg called him back and then asked him what they'd found out, and he said, oh, well, we called the governor's office, and the governor's office said that they didn't have anything to do with that.
Yeah.
And I believe it had to do with the getting rid of the cleansing, purging the voter rolls
right
there, but calling the governor's office, what are they going to do? That is investigative reporting.
And nobody's doing that anymore. I was having a discussion, you know, and I'm going to talk about this in the next segment because I'm looking for work. We're going to talk about it now, but we got caught up in all this. But that's cool. I like this. But one of the people that hopefully will have some work for me has been talking about how we need a website, a political website that deals with these issues. And he calls himself a libertarian, and he wants to call the website politicalnaivete.com. And I said, look, if you're really serious about putting something together, if you want to make money, then let's make something that preaches both to the right and the left. Let's have a right-wing site and a left-wing site, and you can sell books on either side and make money. If that's what your purpose is, that's fine. Let's be honest about it and straightforward. But if you want something that tells the truth, let's go out there and tell the truth. And first of all, you're going to be, you know, if you're talking about naivete, there's very few people that are more naive about politics than libertarians. And to be fair, hardcore left greens, because they're very naive about how to run politics, too. But the truth of the matter is, all we have in the news is this kind of he said, she said gossip type of thing. And nobody's doing any kind of investigative journalism. And I told the guy, I said, if this is what you want, then this is what we have to do. You want to create a site that's going to do actual journalism, which is pretty much dead in this country. And if he's a libertarian type, he's not going to be very happy with a lot of things he is, because the truth of the matter is, for the most part, the left wing has been right all along about shit over the last 5 or 6 years about everything. Actually, about the entire Bush administration and everything that's been going on. The left has been 100% right about what's going on, and the right has been 100% wrong. But you'll never hear it from our press. So, anything more to add on this subject, man, before I head on out?
Move on out.
Okay, let's...
Rolling, rolling, though the streams are swollen.
Roll us out there, Sam.
We'll be right back with more of the Tata Joe Radio Show.
Wow.
Welcome back to the BuzzFlash.com GOP Hypocrite of the Week. Just when you feel like you're safe from one of the masters of the Goebbels-inspired Bush propaganda squad, you wake up and discover you're in the middle of Nightmare on Elm Street 14, and this time, Freddy's getting a government paycheck. Karen Hughes has returned from semi-retirement in Texas to become Bush's official State Department envoy to sell brand Bush to the Muslim world. No offense to the woman whose main job in the 2000 campaign was covering up the truth about Bush and his radical brand of Bushism, but expecting Karen Hughes to win over Muslims is a bit like expecting Condi Rice to have a conscience. You can't put lipstick on a pig and call it democracy, but Bush has already wasted millions of taxpayer dollars, our money, trying. First, there was advertising maven Charlotte Beers, whose work was considered naive, and then Margaret Tutwiler, who quit for a Wall Street gig. They both made small fortunes off the deal, paid for, we remind you, with our tax dollars. The efforts of Beers and Tutwiler were utter failures, and both left their posts in just a few months, because the task at hand, convincing the Muslim world we bring peace, is doomed. How can you market a Christian crusade sprinkled in with political agenda of scaring Americans half to death to the same people that you're bombing mercilessly and vilifying as swarthy evildoers? Additionally, Karen Hughes will have to explain to the rest of the world why Saddam Hussein was a member of the Axis of Evil for torturing Iraqis, but Bush is a good guy for doing the same thing. That's a tall order, but Hughes is a tall woman, with a big bag of lies and a Frank Luntz book of politically correct GOP-friendly words. If she can't convince Muslims that up is down and black is white, no one can. Unfortunately, the Muslim world isn't as easy to fool as the red state working poor who get their information spoon-fed from Fox News. The average Muslim just wants to get on with his or her life, and they can smell a skunk, and Karen Hughes, a mile away. We do have one suggestion for Hughes. Don't hold your first press conference in Fallujah. It's hard to win over Islamic moderates when you're standing on hundreds, if not thousands, of their bodies. Because that's a horror film not even Wes Craven wants to make. Until next week, just remember our motto at BuzzFlash.com. So many Republican hypocrites, so little time. Catch up with you soon.
And we're back on the Cup of Joe radio show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the URL for the site is cupojoe.blogspot.com, and the email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. And I'm watching my wife mouth the words. We gotta put that on videotape.
The thing is, her timing is perfect.
It is.
She's got exactly, like, I could look at her and watch and listen to you, and it could sound like it's coming out of her.
See, what we're gonna do? We're gonna do a video of that. And you know, actually, what I'm going to do, because I like to conduct music, classical music and stuff like that. My wife loves to watch me because I'm very animated. I mean, I couldn't be a conductor in real life because I couldn't tell a musical scale from nothing. But what I'm going to do is, because they've had all these people get famous doing goofy shit on the web, I'm going to record it on video somehow and get it out there. And sooner or later, somebody will say, oh, look at this goofy asshole. And then I'll get a million hits on my site and I'll get people watching and listening to my show.
There you go.
Because if you've never seen me conduct, I mean, I punch notes. I go, boom, when I have a nice note like that.
I think you ought to try it. I got to tell you a story. I saw a talk at Emory University by this fella. I'm trying to think of, he's famous for shoes, right? He's the guy who does those kind of political statements in his ads. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I'm not sure.
Well, you know it if I could think of his name. But anyway,
Benny Shoes. There we go.
No. This is a upscale guy.
Okay.
You know, upscale, high class.
Birkenstock?
No. He's anyway. I saw him, and you know, when he first started out, he said, "Well, I got to have a better idea here because I don't have enough money to make it work." So He went, rather than trying to get financed in the U.S., he went and got financed in Italy, where people were committed to the idea of making shoes.
Yeah.
So that made sense, right?
I think Italy knows something about making shoes.
Right.
Yeah.
But when he came back, having signed the contract to make all his designs and whatnot, he knew that the only way to sell them was at this New York, the special New York fair they have, right, where all the shoe people come in and occupy five stories of a building, and people come in and look at it. And he said, I'm never going to make it there. So what did he do? He says, he calls up New York City and says, how can I park a truck on the street? New York says, there ain't no way you're parking a truck on the street unless you're a film crew. So he says, okay, I'll be a film crew. So he's like making a movie of him selling the shoes out of the back thing. And that was his start, and it was a kickoff, and he did, and he's done wonderfully ever since.
See, I love stories like that. Contrary to what most people believe about people like me who are on the left, on the political left, I am a huge fan of capitalism, and I love stories like that. I love that entrepreneurial spirit. But being a leftist, I just understand that people who work for a living need a little friggin' protection, too. You know, I mean, all the Social Security bullshit is basically a scam to let, you know, the Ken Lays of the world get their hands on your money, is all it really is. But, you know, I've been out of work for a little while now. Maybe I need to do a stunt like that. I'll find some, like I just said, with the conducting.
There's another stunt. There was a guy, he may have been Atlanta. He was a former, like, chief executive somewhere. Couldn't get a job. Too old, you know. Out of touch, whatever the excuses were that the recruiters gave him, and so basically he took a placard, a sign, and he stood on the corner of an intersection of a major whatever road, and just said, CEO out of work, need to be hired, right? And you know as soon it got on the news, right? And very soon after that he was hired.
Maybe I'll do something like that. I got to do something because, you know, and let's talk about this because I'm not the only one who's in this situation. There's a lot of people out there out of work. The unemployment rate is officially, 5.7%? But the real unemployment rate is much higher than that because there are a lot of people who have just basically given up and have not even bothering to look anymore. And to be perfectly honest, well, no, my wife is raising her hand, but she's not looking for work because of health issues. I don't even want to get into that. Now, trust me. But there's a lot of people who just basically said, screw it. And I'll be honest with myself, as far as certain jobs are concerned, I've said, screw it. There's certain things that I'm not going to do, certain places that I'm not going to work anymore. And I'm not going to take these crappy $8 or $9 jobs. I'd almost rather friggin' starve than get a job like that because they don't pay the bills. There's no point in getting a job that's not going to support you, as far as I'm concerned. If you're going to be broke, you might as well be broke and have free time to find something better. You know, I mean, I'm out of work, but I'm busy as hell. Honey, you know how busy I am. You see me. Even when I'm relaxing. I keep remembering the old Star Trek episode where Scotty was reading technical manuals all the time. And Kirk was like, Scotty, don't you ever relax? And he's like, I am relaxing. Engineering was his life. You know, and I'm always keeping busy with something. You were noticing, I was scanning some negatives. You know, and I could probably make money doing that if I could get people to send me negatives or photographs, and I'll scan them and throw them on clean them up and put them in a CD-ROM. So, you know, I just don't know how to get the customers to do that. That's my problem. I'm great at doing the work, but I'm horrible at getting the people to come to me to say, here, I've got some work for you. Do this. I've got some work for you. Do that. You know, that's what I suck at. Now, you work in marketing, is that correct, in a certain way?
Advertising.
So it's your job to get people to buy a product. You know, you're like Darren in Bewitched.
Actually, that's a misconception. It's not my job to get people to buy a product. It's my job to get them to try a product. It's my job to open a door to a product and to keep your mind focused on it.
But looking for work for you is different than me looking for work, because we have different types of skills. And I'm trying to do some IT stuff, and I know the IT market is glutted as all get out, but I'm just trying to get my foot into the door here and there, doing some graphics work. We just finished, you saw it right here, the DeKalb Democrats newsletter. That's the first issue. We're getting started on the second issue now. But I have a hard time looking for work. I have a hard time selling myself. And that's really my problem. And we've talked about this about the show, too, about how to increase the show's rating. Because I have maybe 100, 200 regular listeners. I don't have all the stats. I know I get about 70 or 80 regulars on Ben Birch from the White Rose Society. And, by the way, I encourage people to go to the whiteroseSociety.org. That's exactly how it is, whiteroseSociety.org.
And to email.
Well, email.
And tell us what you think.
Well, yeah, but we'll get to that in a second. But you know, I encourage people to get on his site because he's really a worthwhile site. I mean, I'm not the only show that he's got on there. He's got Randy Rhodes and Mike Malloy and Tom Hartman and all these other people that are on there, all archived. So anybody can listen to any one of their shows that have online. It's cool. But I'm trying to get some sort of situation where I can make the kind of money that I want to make and not just work. Because my last job at Siemens didn't pay shit. I mean, it's $13 an hour, which actually sounds very good. I mean, there's a lot of people who are making half of that in this day and age right now. How they get by, I have no idea, because I couldn't get by on $13 an hour. And it's not like I pay a ton of money for rent here. Part of the problem is that when we first got here, I was unemployed and we got, you know, backed up on rent. And the landlord, thank God for him, has been very nice and let us just pay what we can. But you know, it keeps building up. And the only way I'm going to be able to get around that is to get the kind of job where I can pay far more than what I would normally have to pay, so I can get caught up and get ahead. And it's very, very difficult for me because I don't have any college. I've mostly been in kind of, you might say, unskilled labor. My only technical position was a calibration technician in the Air Force. And I really didn't want to pursue a career in that because you really, the only career you have in PMEL, which is what the Air Force calls it, is that you can be a bench technician or you can be a supervisor of bench technicians. And that's really all you can do. And I think I want a little bit more out of that. But the money's good. It's like $20, $25 an hour. But you know what? It's not enough for me. I'm not talking about just the money. It's not enough to just do something day in and day out. My friend Dave said, there are jobs that you may not like, but you would certainly like paying the bills. And that's an attitude that I agree with, but I don't know if it's ADD or whatever. After a year or so with a company, I just get bored stiff. You okay, Rick? You're not going to die on us here. Rick's been fighting a flu for what? How many months now?
I'm getting better, Joe.
You're finally getting better. Well, you look good. You look good, by the way. I'm a slob right now. I'm just like in slob mode. I'd come back from the Democrats meeting and I was wearing nicer clothes, but it's like I'm here in my home and I'm relaxing.
I understand perfectly, but I'm going to the gym.
You're going?
I'm going back to, I was away for it for about 6 months, and you know, I got cold or I started doing these trips or I got sick or something, but I'm going back to the gym.
You won't catch me doing that shit.
Maybe. Oh, it'll make you feel so good, Joe. I'm telling you.
No, trust me. Physical stuff like that, I'd be so tired. You think I have trouble doing the radio show now? Get me in a gym. I'll never be able to do a damn radio show. I'll come home and it's like, let me lie down. I wouldn't even have any energy.
Oh, yeah. You're like that at first. You're like that at first. If you can get past the first week.
Mm-hmm.
Get past the first week. And the key is not to overstress yourself. The idea is like, okay, all right, I go there, and I get on. I mean, I could do the same thing at a park, but I walk on the machines.
I'm not doing any of that shit.
It's good.
You want to do it? That's great. That's fine. I love you. You're wonderful. You do it. Me, I ain't going near no fucking gym. I can't stand the places. But anyway, you know, I'm spending a lot of time looking for work now. And for those of you who are reading the blog, and again, cupojoe.blogspot.com, comment on when you see I put a post up there. Just say, yeah, Joe, or you suck, or whatever. Say something, or email me at joevec@bellsouth.net. In fact, we're going to talk about that in a minute because we got a couple of things that we want you to write for. But, you know, I hadn't had a post. I had a bunch of posts on Monday. Then I didn't post anything until today, and I had a couple of posts today before I went to the Decab Dems. Part of that is because I'm spending a lot more time now looking for work. I'm doing a lot of online stuff. The AJC, Monster.com, Guru, Craigslist. I found some interesting stuff on Craigslist. I do at least 10 to 12 a day. I spend at least 3 to 4 hours a day. And a lot of it is just cut and paste, really. You know, you have kind of a... And I hate to do it that way because I do want to personalize a cover letter. But, you know, you basically have a cover letter that deals with different types of jobs. And, you know, you just cut and paste those sections in there where you need, and you have your resume that you either just send as an attachment or you just paste as a text file into an area they select or paste it into an email. And that's how a lot of job search is done. I do more of that than I do pounding the pavement, although I do do the pounding.
Well, you know what the headhunters say? The headhunters say that every letter should be personalized. Every resume should be personalized. Mm-hmm. The question is, who the hell got time to do that?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, if it's a job you really think you'd be good at, really, really think you'd be good at, I think go for it. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, it's a numbers game.
Right.
And it's the more resumes you get out there, that's assuming your resume is as good as you can frame it.
Right.
And your letters are as good as you can frame it.
Well, hold on here. Let me show you. Because this is Phyllis is the one that helped me out with this. And she's made six-figure jobs for many, many years. So I assume she knows. And this is what she put together for me. And I think it looks pretty good myself. It looks better than the ones that I had done before. I try not to get – when I put together a resume, first of all, I try to have only one page. Because – a lot of companies don't have the time to look through a 2 or 3 page resume. And you're talking about guys who are, you know, they have to go through, you know, 50, 100, 200 resumes in a day. They're not going to have time to look for stuff in detail. They may want something that sticks out a little bit, and that doesn't really stick out as much as it could. But, you know, it's a lot nicer than what I have had in the past. And Phyllis gave me some very good advice along those lines. But you send these out over email, and that's available as a doc file. And I also, like I said, send texts out through email. But, you know, you do so much of it online nowadays that people don't get a chance to see. What do you think? Is it a nice-looking resume?
It's a nice-looking resume. I mean, that's the key. Part of it is looking nice, too.
Mm-hmm.
Because you got to remember that you're not the only one using the email these days.
Right, right.
And so HR managers are inundated with emails. They put it out on Monster. And the next thing they know is there's 1,000 resumes in their box, and they've got to sort through them. So if there's a way you can stand out.
I've noticed something on the AJC, too, because I use the AJC. I also use the Georgia Department of Labor. But Georgia Department of Labor doesn't have – Georgia Department of Labor has mostly the dead-end type of jobs that I'm trying to avoid. I will look through there, but they don't really have as you know the type of money jobs that I'm looking for. But the AJC, which is the local newspaper, the urinal constipation, as I call it, on their website, their job search, I've noticed that there's only like 3 or 4 different companies that I keep getting hits from. And it's like the Matrix company and what the hell is that other one? But there's another one. It's like all the jobs are in like the same groupings, the same companies. Are these people always looking for somebody? What's the deal? How come they haven't filled any of these positions? And it's multiple positions. So I'm really not sure what the deal is with those people. But after a while, it just gets tiring. But I'll do 3 or 4 on Craigslist. I'll do 3 or 4 on Monster. I'll do 2 or 3 on AJC because new ones do pop up. I'm on Guru. I'm on Techie Gold. Adeco, which has a technical branch, I'm on with them. And, you know, anything you can take advantage of. And I need to look for more temp services because temp services are a good way to at least get your foot in the door in some places. Or even if they don't hire you on permanently, it's something you can put in your experience. And I'm doing some work for Net Zero, which is a startup company, just doing some little IT work there. Nothing fancy, just setting up some computer stuff, mostly doing some administrative office type work.
I've heard of Net Zero.
Not Net Zero. NetTone, excuse me. NetTone Incorporated. Net Zero is that...
It's an IP company.
It's an IP company, yeah. And I don't really care for that. I've seen their advertisements, and I know exactly what they're about, too. They talk about speed, but really what they do is they have a buffer. And it takes time to fill the buffer. Once the buffer's filled, everything comes quickly. It's filling the buffer takes time. And you're not going to increase the speed of your downloads. That's
all about catchwork.
Yeah. So, you know, and I'm the technically minded enough to know and understand this when people talk about that. And really what that catches is people who don't know that much about computers. And there's still a lot of people who are out there like that. Even people who really should. My sister should know more about computers than she does, although she uses Quark Express, which is a really complex program. At any rate, I do all these different things, and I'm, like I said, I'm trying to get something. Even if I get a temp job that pays $20 or so an hour, and, you know, I can hold that for 2 weeks, that's pretty good right there. Then I can put that on my resume, and that'll help me get something else and then lead to something else. What I'd like to do is to do some sort of job either as a graphic designer or something where I can telecommute so I can stay home and take care of the wife because she is ill. And when she has her surgery, hopefully on April the 1st, April Fool's Day, I know, but if everything goes as planned, that's when she has her surgery. I'm going to have to be here to take care of her for a while. So it's going to be difficult for me to be able to go to work. Although with her rehab, she really doesn't require me being there 24/7. So if I had a job, I could go to the job. But looking for work is difficult now. I mean, it used to be where you can get a job so long as you presented yourself nicely. If the company was honestly looking for people, which most of them were. I'm talking about back in the 70s, you know, the 60s and 70s. That you had a fair chance of getting a job if you were well-groomed, if you were intelligent. Nowadays, man, you got to have college education. You got to have this. You got to have that. And no companies want to train anymore. I've noticed that. No companies want to train anymore. They want you to be able to walk in there and do the job like you were a 15-year veteran. And to me, that is not good for a company because you have people who are used to doing things a certain way. If you get someone who's talented and you know they know the software or know what you need to do, but you can train them in the way you want them to do it, that's better for the company in the long run because every company does things a little bit differently. You know, they all have their own ways of running their inventory or doing their programs and stuff like that. Everyone does it a little bit differently, and you don't want to have somebody coming in where you have to unteach them things that they've learned elsewhere. In fact, they hate that. So, at any rate, I'm going to take a little break here, and we're going to come back and talk about some other stuff, and we'll be back in a minute. Sam, play us out.
The Cup of Joe Radio Show will be right back.
And we're back on the Cup of Joe Radio Show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the URL for the site is cupojoe.blogspot.com, and the email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. And if you're out there looking for work, or if you've got a stupid boss story, and that's one of the things that I want to start doing. I want to hear your stupid boss stories. David Letterman has stupid pet tricks. I've got stupid boss stories. You know, the problem that they have is that the right wing is always doing stuff and talk about how stupid the government is. But we all know for a fact that the really stupid shit happens every day at the workplace. Stupid things your boss does. You don't have to name your boss. You don't have to name your business. We don't want to get you in trouble. But tell us your story about what your boss did. What you did about it, if possible, and just all the goofy, stupid shit that goes on in the workplace that everybody knows about, but maybe people feel that it's just inherent to their company. Because I'll guarantee you, with the number of different jobs that I've had over the course of the years, it happens everywhere.
I'm going to tell you a couple. My last boss.
What was your last boss?
My last boss in Washington, D.C. He used to pluck a hair out of his chest.
What?
Pluck a hair out of his chest.
What the hell?
What the hell? And then he would clean his teeth with it.
Oh, you're shitting me.
While he was driving.
You're shitting me.
While he was driving. He'd take the hands
off. How long were these fucking chest hairs?
I don't know.
Is this guy an ape? Were you working for the Washington Zoo?
He was an ape. He used to come. He kicked out my door a few times.
For what?
Because he didn't like it shut. And he'd get angry at people who had a shut door, even if you're trying to keep the noise out. He kicked it down. And this is a man who kept the picture of the Dalai Lama on his wall.
Man has some serious work rage.
He has some work issues.
God almighty.
He has some real work issues.
I've had some killers. You know, most of my shit is just like when I was working at Seaman, the supervisor on the paint line. And this guy was an idiot. I mean, that's just the bottom line. This guy was an idiot. And basically, the paint line is very simple. You have parts that have been manufactured that need to be painted. And how they got painted in Siemens was that you had this overhanging conveyor belt. And I've talked about this before on the show. You had this overhanging conveyor belt, and you hang the part on one end. It goes through the vat of paint, gets dried. It gets painted by some electrical process other than just dipping it in the paint. And then it gets dried, and then it's pulled off on the end and stacked neatly so that people can use it for whatever parts that they're building. And it's all the same paint. I mean, it was electrical circuit boxes, so everything was the same shade of, like, navy gray or whatever the hell it was, like a battleship gray or something. But there's ways of hanging this, and we figured it out. I figured out one day that 11,000, about 5,000 hangers pass by. Each hanger has two hooks on it, so theoretically, depending on the size of the part, you can hang two parts on one hanger, on one hanger. And about 11,000 hooks pass by the paint line every day. So theoretically, the maximum amount of parts that you should be able to get out is 11,000. And they kept pushing for a 10,000 quota. But you can't make a 10,000 quota if you're putting out big boxes that take up five or six hangers. If you're putting a bunch of putting out a bunch of those, you're not going to get those numbers because it's simply, you know, it's simply not possible because there's only so many, you know, you only have so much time in a day and there's only so many. But this guy didn't understand that. He also didn't understand the idea that if you're putting different parts on, that you stagger them out a little bit so that the people on the far back end who are trying to pull the parts off and stack them have time to change when it comes, because that line doesn't stop. It's not a manual line. You know, you have to keep going, and you have to keep working. And if you have a little space, or if you have, if you even organize it in such a way so that when you're finished with one part, by the time the next part comes through, then you'll have time to go and, you know, move over to the next box or the next pallet where you've got to put the stuff on. You know, if you organize it properly, you can still get your 9,000-10,000 parts a day and have a decent production and not drive your workers crazy. But he didn't understand that, and he really didn't care. His whole method of supervising was to stand over the guys hanging the parts and say, use every hook. Use every hook. You know? And
why don't we start something, Joe?
What?
Why don't we start a stupid boss day?
Stupid boss
in
day?
In honor of stupid bosses.
You mean like go to Congress and have a petition for a...
We could do that. That would be all right. We could do that.
Yes.
But what we do is actually have a Stupid Boss Day in which everybody sends in their stories about stupid bosses.
Sure.
And we pick it and we publish it.
Sure.
And on the Stupid Boss website.
We could have a Stupid Boss website. We could put a book together. Shit, I know. I could almost write a book by myself about all the stupid. Have you ever noticed that, too, about when you're working, how your boss is dumber than you are? And you wonder how the hell they got in that position to begin with?
But that's the case. The bosses are always dumber than you are.
Now, what is it then? What is it that makes them bosses? I'll tell you what makes them bosses.
Until you become the boss, then you're dumber than they are.
No, you know something. When I was running that photo lab, my workers loved me because I understood exactly what their needs were, and I geared myself towards them. Most bosses are either control freaks or they're just lazy bastards. I admitted to my workers that I was a lazy bastard, but I explained it to them in the context of this is what I expect out of you. This is what your job is. My job is to make sure you have the stuff you need to do your job so that your job doesn't include digging around looking for parts that you need. Because that happens in all workplaces, too. You know, you've got situations where you're fighting with your other employees over stuff you need to do your job. It's the boss's job, your management's job, to make sure that this shit doesn't happen. Everything should
happen. Sure. The boss's job really is to look after the workers.
Yeah.
That's the way I look at it when I was the boss.
Well, it's to look after the workers, but also look after the company. When the company's not profitable, that's it. But you have to be honest, and you have to balance that.
That's how you look after the workers.
Well, yeah.
You make sure the company's profitable. And you make sure that it goes back to them in some fashion.
But so many workers are just control freaks. You know, just absolute control freaks and idiots. Just fucking idiots. I cannot believe some of the stupid people. And it drives me crazy. It's another reason why I lose work is because I suddenly come to the realization that my boss is dumber than I am. And that's been true almost every place that I've worked at.
Well, that's why I went to the workers' march last week, Joe.
That's why we had a family day / workers' march. And I know we're trying to get onto the subject that we meant to talk about.
We meant to talk about it. I was trying to get you a segue there.
Trying to get me a segue. That's right. And that's why we have professional radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is professional radio. No, you went. They had a workers' march. And let's get into this because every now and then we have to protest about certain things. And you went to the march. And how it started was that the Republicans who now control the Georgia Congress, or the Georgia State Assembly is what it's called, the House and the Senate. And they had what they called a family day, which was where they would bring their families and people. The public was generally invited to have a special Saturday session to see how government works. And what happened once they announced that is that a lot of different protest groups, including a group I'm with called Defenders of Democracy, and you were there with what group were you there with?
There with the AFL-CIO.
The AFL-CIO, which, by the way, the IBEW, which I used to belong to, was an affiliate of the AFL-CIO. And I would have been there except that I overslept. I'm sorry. It's a morning thing. I'm not a morning person, ladies and gentlemen. I'm an afternoon person.
But I was there. I was there with the wife.
You were there with the wife.
We got there at 8 o'clock in the morning, which was a little bit of a haul for us, too. Mm-hmm. But it was good. It was it wasn't a long march. It was about a mile and a half up the hill from...
Were there a lot of people there?
Oh, I'd say, you know, as the marches in Georgia or Atlanta go, for liberal causes,
mm-hmm.
right, or progressive causes. It was pretty good.
Yeah. Well, you're going to get more of that here in Atlanta than you are anywhere else.
Well, there was supposed to be one yesterday as well,
yeah.
marking the second anniversary of the Iraq War.
There were several of them. They weren't as big as the protests before the war, but they were still.
There was a big one up in Fort Bragg,
mm-hmm.
And they had a lot of the soldiers and the soldiers' families
mm-hmm.
coming out to speak out against
and
the war.
And this is in North Carolina, for
and
Christ's
this is
sake.
In Fort Bragg, which is, you know, and North Carolina's proud of its military.
That's right.
And its military heritage. I went to the one in the anti-war one last August in New York City,
mm-hmm.
where they had a whole lot of people
the
arrested.
Millions, there were millions,
millions of people. And it was a fantastic march. We had a great time.
Well, you know, I talked to my sister about that. My sister lives up in New York. She is, in fact, an editor for the Newsday newspaper. Not serious journalism. She does. She edits, like, the entertainment pages. But it's good. You know, it's a good newspaper. And although they have some interesting editorials there, I read from time to time. But, you know, I was talking to her about whether she and her daughter was going to go to any of the big protests. And this was before the Iraqi war started. This was once they were having some of the 100, 200,000, 400,000 people, maybe even a million. You can't tell in those big canyons in New York how many people you have, but there were huge crowds. I saw the pictures. She said, well, you know, you look at all the protesting and what does it do? What good does it do? I mean, she agreed with the cause, but it was like, what good does it do? And I talked about this about the polls earlier. If the polls are all against the president, but the elections are rigged, what the hell difference does it make? They ignored all the protesters, and they went ahead and did the war anyway. They were planning on it, and there was nothing to stop them. The only thing that would have stopped them is if the military would have said, no, we're not going. If the military would have absolutely refused. So you go to the protest march, and well, I think they do some good. I'm not saying I think they don't do any good, because I think at the very least people need to have their voices heard. But the reality is that they really don't seem to get a whole lot accomplished unless they go on for really, really long periods of time and they have somebody serious backing them up eventually. And the press was not on the side of the protesters at all. In fact, they didn't even mention it in the AJC. As far as I know, they didn't mention it on local news at all. My wife watched the local news. She said she didn't see a damn thing about it.
You know? Well, it took place in Centennial Park. I didn't go to it yesterday, but and I'm not sure what happened.
But I'm talking about the March 12th protest that you went on.
Oh, there were cameras out there.
Yeah, but we didn't.
It was definitely covered.
Yeah, but
in some fashion,
they had cameras, but it never got on the air. At least not on the channels that my wife watched. They didn't bring it up. There was mentioned in Creative Loafing newspaper, which is the only newspaper around here that I'm going to read. It's a local one of those local weekly ones. But, oh, man, we're running out of time. I just note the time.
Anyway, get out and protest anything the Bush administration does. That's my word for the wise this week. Take care.
And
I say goodbye, Joe. Bye, Joe.
Bye, Joe. Well, we still got about 30 seconds left here to kill.
Talk, baby.
But protesting is good. It's important. But I just don't think it matters a whole hell of a lot in this day and age.
Well, no, it makes a difference because you get the noise levels. It's all about noise levels. It's mm-hmm. about noise levels in the Congress. You write your congressman, enough people write to congressman, it will make a difference. If enough people get out on the streets to protest, it makes a difference. You start to convince people who are on the fringe. The fringe grows.
And from there, you might
have a movement.
All right, that's it. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Joe, I crave a plate of Dave, oh, in a jar of John. Don't put anything on, I'll chug a jug of George. I'll sip a mug of Doug with a creamer of Steve. How many more does that leave? You'd be a pot of Scott, heat up a pan of Stan, throw in a handful of Dick. That'll do everything. Open a can of Dan, make a meal of Sam. But don't give me no mug, cause what I really want's a cup of Joe.
The Cup of Joe Radio Show has been recorded live at the fabulous Studio Al in Decatur, Georgia, and has been produced by Jove Enterprises, Incorporated. Joe Vecchio, the host of the Cup of Joe Radio Show, is a production of Mr. and Mrs. Vecchio of Brooklyn, New York.
of steel, a mug of Doug, a cup of